Now, international migration is often treated as a problem, a threat even to international order and national security. But our next guest says the human species is one of many in nature that has relied on migration as a method of survival. And in an era of climate change, migration may be a big part of our survival toolkit for humans and other species as well. In her new book, she looks at the history and biology behind immigration and shares stories of people caught up in an increasingly difficult migration landscape. Sonia Shaw is author of the books Pandemic and The Fever. Her latest is called The Next Great Migration, The Beauty and Terror of Life on the Move. Sonia, welcome to Central Time.
Nice to be here.
Well, you look back at our development as a species, as humans. How big a role did migration play?
Well, I think what we're learning now, just in really recent years, is that migration was not the intermittent, exceptional kind of phenomenon that we've long thought of it as, but really central to our own history as humans, but also really central in nature, you know, for a lot of wildlife as well. So migration has moved, I think, from the margins to really the middle of, you know, our understanding of how the biology and how the ecosystems of the world function.
But you say in intellectual history, there was this change where we started to view ourselves as, you know, distinct groups of people rooted to distinct places, somehow even carrying that with us when we would move to a new place. Why did we develop this mindset that the norm is to be rooted in one place?
Yeah, it's interesting. I tried to trace that back, and the moment I trace it back to is when Carl Linnaeus, the Swedish naturalist, set out the taxonomy of the world that, you know, modern biologists still use to this day. And he basically decided where everything belonged. And for him, you know, different wild species belonged exactly where he found them. Different peoples who lived on different continents, they belonged in those places too. So he had a kind of picture of nature that was very still. Everything was in a certain place where God had put it. And that's where it had always been because, you know, nature was an expression of God's perfection for him. And he's considered today the father of modern taxonomy. So the way he categorized and classified all of the species has been very much incorporated into not just how we study nature, but also how we think of it.
And you see the same patterns in non-human species of plants and animals as we see in humans. Can you talk about the importance of migration as a way for creatures to adapt, contrary to that idea that we had this fixed set of species in fixed places?
Yeah, so we teach our kids that idea from the very youngest ages with our, you know, our animal maps where the camel stands in for the Middle East and the kangaroo stands in for Australia and the, you know, bear stands in for North America, et cetera, et cetera. It's this whole idea of animals being from certain places where they belong. But what scientists are learning in just the last handful of years through new technology like GPS and solar power, you can actually tag animals and track their movements continuously over their lifetime, regardless of where they go. That's something new that has only recently been possible. And what scientists are learning is that all of these creatures move way more than anyone ever thought. They don't stay in their nice little defined niches and habitats that we've kind of contained them in. You know, they track animals in parks that parks have been built for them, you know, and we've protected these nice parks and reserves, and they're moving way beyond those. You know, giraffes are moving, you know, they're spending most of their time outside of the reserves we have created for them. Turtles swimming way beyond the boundaries of marine protected zones. Elephants, who are thought to range only in one country, are wandering across many countries. So we're just seeing this picture of movement that's far greater in scale, in pace, in complexity than we have thought in the past.
We're talking to science writer Sonia Shaw about her new book, The Next Great Migration, The Beauty and Terror of Life on the Move. Let's get into that concept now, the next great migration. What are you talking about there?
Well, one thing that we're starting to understand about what migration is that it's a response to environmental change. It's a way to adapt and be resilient to those changes. So right now, of course, we're living in this period of massive change because of the, you know, climate change. And we're already seeing around 80% of wild species are moving into new places in sync with the shifting climate. And that's not just, you know, a cod, you know, like fish in the sea. Obviously, they can move pretty fast. They've shifted more than 200 kilometers a decade towards the poles, and terrestrial animals are moving up into the heights. Frogs and fungi in the Andes have climbed 400 meters over the past 70 years. But it's not only the kind of mobile species we think of. Everything's on the move. Coral reefs are moving. Forests are moving. Coral polyps around Japan have been tracked since the 1930s. And they've been moving 14 kilometers north every year. Forests in the Himalayas have been climbing uphill around 20 meters every decade. So you just see this picture, all these creatures are really trying to move in shift with in sync with the shifting climate.
And you look a lot at barriers to movement for humans and other species. Sometimes those are natural barriers, a desert, say, or an ocean. But you look a lot at human-created barriers. Let's first of all look at how humans have carved up the world in ways that make it difficult for, say, animal species to move around, to have successful breeding populations in as wide an area as they need to.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at migration in animals and their shifting ranges, one of the biggest barriers is that they have to move through all of our stuff. You know, our cities, our towns, our mines, our farms, our industrial activities have swallowed up over half of the terrestrial surface of the planet. So wild species that are trying to move, you know, make these really life-saving movements into new places, they get caught in, you know, killed on highways or distracted by lights or, you know, any number of different ways in which our infrastructure prevents them from moving. And there's actually been really good correlations between the ability of an animal to move and the human footprint in a certain landscape. So what a lot of conservationists are thinking about doing now is instead of creating more parks to conserve, you know, fixed areas, what we need to do is protect bridges and corridors so that wildlife can actually move into the places where they're going to be able to survive better.
And then when it comes to human migration, and this ends up being a controversial issue, a huge issue in American politics these days, you write that we've seen in the last few decades a hardening of borders, where once upon a time a lot of boundaries between groups of people or countries were a little more fuzzy. We are really delineating those and stopping movement through those. Can you talk about that global trend?
Yeah, we have more walls and fences on international borders today than at any time in the past. So we're really living in this moment where we need to move more than anything, you know, more than any time in the past, and yet we're making it harder for people to do that. But what, you know, the kind of flip side of that is, you know, people are moving. We have more people living outside of the countries of their birth than ever before. We have more people who are displaced from their home today than at any time since the Second World War. And organizations like the International Organization on Migration, which is a UN agency, predicts that 200 million or more people may need to move in coming decades as the climate changes. So those movements, if we think of them as negative and as solely disruptive, then I think the political response is pull up the ladders, you know, close the gates, don't let them in. They're going to inundate us. But if we start to understand migration in a new way, that these movements are actually not the crisis. The movements are maybe the result of a crisis, the climate crisis or other crises, but the movements themselves are part of the solution. It's part of how we adapt to all these changes. And I think, you know, that's kind of the direction I'm trying to, the argument I'm trying to build in the book is like, let's look at this in a different light, where migration isn't catastrophic. You know, migration is actually the solution to the problems we're facing.
I want to spend some time on that in a couple of minutes, but I also want to zoom in here. You spend a lot of time in your book talking about refugees you've met, that you've worked with in some cases. Can you talk about what you learned from, you know, not the statistics and not the big picture, but from the actual people who have, in often desperate situations, moved as a survival mechanism?
Well, this is what kind of started the journey that became this book for me. Was I wrote a book called Pandemic a few years ago that came out in 2016, and by the time it was over, the quote unquote migrant crisis in the Mediterranean had started up, and it was just grabbing all the headlines. You know, these people from Syria and Afghanistan trying to get into Europe, and they're drowning in the Mediterranean Sea and getting, you know, stuck on these rickety vessels and things like that. And I went there to try to understand how this might be disruptive to public health and to all these other things that I've been looking at for a long time. And what I found when I was finally there is that, you know, these people were not carrying disease and disruption, which is what I had thought. You know, I had come there to say, oh, there's going to be outbreaks of disease and things like that. It was just the opposite. That what I found is that people on the move in general are healthier than the host populations they enter. And that's actually a documented effect called the healthy migrant effect. Migrants have better health outcomes. They have less obesity. They have, you know, they have what's called portable capital, right? Like they don't have property perhaps, and they don't have titles, but they have good health. They have skills. They have education. They have social contacts. They have resilience, all these things, because you need them to move. So the whole way we kind of characterize migrants and refugees and asylum seekers and all these people on the move who we have shut out and marginalized in the way we think about them, and also in our policies, is absolutely backwards. You know, these people, the people I met when I was there were, you know, and this is just so trite and obvious to say, but they were incredibly resilient. They're resourceful people. These are people who are journalists or scientists or teachers. These are the people I found in the refugee camps in Greece, stuck, you know, they had walked there with their families from Afghanistan and Syria. So our whole mindset about migration is what I wanted to interrogate in this book. And as I did it, I found that so many of our reflexive ideas about migrants are absolutely backwards.
We're talking to science writer Sonia Shah about her new book, The Next Great Migration, The Beauty and Terror of Life on the Move. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or your family moved around over the years within national borders or beyond? Do you think we need to have tough border policies, or do you think we should be more welcoming to immigrants? Call in with your thoughts and your questions for our guest about her book at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the science and history of migration with science writer Sonia Shah. Her newest book is The Next Great Migration, The Beauty and Terror of Life on the Move. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a migrant, an immigrant to the United States or from within the United States? Love to hear the story of why you or your parents or grandparents moved. Do you work with or live around immigrants? What's been the experience getting to know them, seeing them in your workspace or community? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Sonia, when, you know, you've got one group of people who have been living in a place for a couple few generations or more, and there is a noticeable change, a group of new people coming from out of state, out of country, whatever. Is there a way to make that a positive experience, that change, given that change, any kind of change can be hard for people?
And there's no doubt that changes are disruptive. You know, any kind of change is disruptive. There's a loss, but there's also gains, right? So I think the problem we have with our conversation around migration is that we only look at a very small slice of it. So we look at, say, asylum seekers, or we look at refugees, or we look at long-distance international migrants who are coming into our particular community. What we're not seeing is the huge ocean of migration that's happening beneath our notice without causing problems, that, you know, people are moving all the time. And not just right now, but also in our past. You know, we think of our past as having this punctuated by, you know, kind of anomalous migration. So the migration out of Africa, that was one. And then the modern era of migration that began when we started being able to, you know, have steamships and planes and things like that. But what we now understand is that we have not been migrants as an exceptional experience. It's been continuous. You know, scientists are putting together our migratory past through ancient DNA. This is only just happening the last few years. And what they're learning is that we're moving all along. So it's not something that we do as, it's not a rare thing. It's not exceptional. It's not disruptive. It's really been continuous. People walked out of Africa into the Americas. They went back into Europe. They went into Asia. They didn't stay put. We had multiple waves of humans migrating into places like the Tibetan Plateau, out into the most remote islands of the Pacific. We did it again and again. We didn't do it because we were desperate. We didn't do it because of catastrophe. We didn't do it because we ran out of food or land or, you know, any of the other things that was still present in Africa where we started out. We moved anyway. So it's really played such a huge role in our own path. So I think when we talk about, well, aren't these newcomers kind of disruptive? Yeah, sure, they are. But let's look at the bigger picture, the context of all the movement that's happening. The people who are moving all the time, continuously, who we are not noticing because they integrate, because they assimilate, because they're moving within borders, perhaps, because they're moving from neighboring countries that we don't mind, you know, that we're not paying attention to. So if you look at the disruptions that we're talking about, you know, in any specific case, in this broader context, I think the pros and cons kind of, you know, work out differently.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Karen is with us in Watertown. Karen, hello.
Hi, I've been listening to this, and I also have been thinking about this topic for a while. And I think I'm more speaking about the last 400 years and more the United States than other countries. But it seems to me that the people who migrate come from money. They have the resources. Because they have the resources, they're educated, and they make a better way in the United States or perhaps other countries. I'm not quite as national about this question as I thought I was going to be, because I also think that people who don't have money sometimes have more, oh, for lack of a better word, gumption and willingness to work hard no matter what to get to a better place. Not necessarily.
Gotcha. I got you, Karen. I'm going to jump in because we just have a few minutes left. Sonia, that was, I think she's hitting that idea of the portable capital you were talking about that often people who move bring with them.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's not the poorest of the poor, you know, what we see in international migration. It's not the poorest of the poor who are able to move. So the people who are able to move are people who have a lot of the kinds of things that are considered really the bedrock, you know, qualities that you need in building sort of the middle class, right? Resourcefulness, education, skills, good health.
Thanks for that call.
We're talking right, yeah.
We're talking to Sonia Shaw, author of the new book, The Next Great Migration. Back to your calls. Enos is with us now in Madison. Enos, hello.
Yes, hello.
What did you want to tell us about?
So I'm from Germany originally. I came here in my early 20s, and it was hard to move, you know, and I wanted to just like, I thought it was very interesting, the idea of, that people that move are resilient, and you know what, that is probably very true, because you know, change, for a person to change, and even if that's just change of location, I mean that it takes a lot. And I just also the idea of that, if you're, you know, coming to a place where people are like, you know, locked in their home sweet home mentality, and we've been doing this for 100 years, and this is how we're going to do it. Well, sometimes change.
Enos, thanks a lot for the call. And Sonia, I know this is a personal story for you. This is connected to your own family's story. Can you connect with Enos a little bit about, making that transition to the new place from your own family's history?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my parents were immigrants from India. They settled in the U.S. a few years before I was born. That act of international migration became central in their lives, but it also became central in my life because it made me feel like out of place. You know, it wasn't until I started putting this book together that I realized, like, if you have a migratory past, that is actually, you know, the normal thing. Like, that is actually in the larger scale of human history and human experience, like being a migrant or being a recent migrant, that's central. You know, what's really kind of more unusual, perhaps, is staying still. So, you know, I think the other point that I'd like to make is that, yes, it does take a lot of resilience to move into new places. And that's why immigrants have the kind of status that we see with, you know, education and health and all of that. But at the same time, like, we all are built to move. You know, our bodies are very adaptable. There's really interesting studies being done as far back as the early 20th century that showed that immigrants' children, and immigrants themselves, their bodies would literally start to change as soon as they started moving into a new place. You know, so they would measure all these, you know, they take your measurements of your limbs and all your bodily measurements. This is a thing that was common in the 1920s and 30s. And they found that immigrants changed. Our bodies literally shapeshift depending on where we go. And what this tells me is that we are built for migration. Our bodies are good at it.
We'll leave it there. Sonia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's science writer Sonia Shaw. We talked to her today about her new book. It's called The Next Great Migration, The Beauty and Terror of Life on the Move.